Hello. Hello, my darlings. Welcome to the next episode of Back to the Source. The reason I've started with that rather affectionate intro is because we're doing one for the kids this week.
For the kids?
Yeah. We are looking at Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is the book by Roald Dahl, released in 1970, and the film by Wes Anderson, released in 2009. I've got to admit right away, Mike, I have an extreme bias towards this film.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
In which way?
In a very good way.
All right, okay.
It does feel a little bit like someone in America just said, you know what, let's make a film that Tom would really enjoy. It's like a Roald Dahl book adapted by Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
And it's got Jarvis Cocker in it. I couldn't really ask anything more. Cool. So, before we get onto that, have you got any minutes from last week's episode?
The wife wasn't too angry about me calling her an idiot.
That's good. Yeah. I was a little bit worried about that, because I know her family listened to it as well.
Oh no, I haven't told any of them. I went and told Caitlin straight before it went up, so she was prepared. She seemed all right with it. I explained myself, but yeah.
Fair enough. I think I let myself down again a bit last week.
Why?
I was listening back, and there's a bit where I'm explaining Henry's condition.
Yeah.
Just say it's a little bit like epilepsy. He'll just disappear from his own timeline every now and again. So in my own little world, epileptics have the ability to time travel.
That'd be interesting.
I got some good feedback from last week. So we've got a couple of definite listeners now that I know are tuning in, or hopefully anyway. Firstly, my Auntie Sue.
Yeah.
She was very impressed. Yeah, she gave us some really nice feedback. Yeah, very happy. Yeah. So hello, Auntie Sue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Auntie Sue.
She's requested that we do Far From the Maddening Crowd.
Okay.
I've not read or seen either of them.
No,
I don't even know if there's a film adaptation of it. But we'll give it a go. Also, a friend of the family, Lynette Chasmer.
Hello.
Been listening in. Hello, Lynette. And she's requested that we do The Beach.
Oh, The Beach. Yeah, I've heard them a couple of times, yeah.
But thank you very much for listening, guys. That was some really lovely comments. And also, we've had comments from people we don't even know as well.
Have we?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
I was really excited on iTunes.
Vague Lil.
She's been anything but vague in her description of us.
Got to look that up after this.
So thank you very much, Lil.
Vague Lil.
Yeah. I'd say we'd meet her, but we probably couldn't pick her out in the crowd. She'd just be like, a blur. Cool.
Well,
and also, to branch out the family of Back to the Source, you've got a bit of an announcement to make, haven't you, Mike?
We're going to have someone come and talk with us today. My little sister, who's Millie. Come and say hello, Millie.
Hi.
You've got to come and talk about yourself. Come and say who you are. Name and how old.
Hi, I'm Millie and I'm 10 years old.
10 years old. And she's going to help us with this one today, aren't you, for a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we need a child's perspective on this film.
Yeah, we do.
So, a little bit of backstory first. So, the film rights for this film were bought by Revolution Studios. I think it was Revolution. I think I'm getting that right. And originally, it was going to be made with Wes Anderson and Henry Selick, who went on to direct Coraline. But he ended up leaving the project, and Wes Anderson directed it himself, co-wrote the script with Noah Baumbach, and was shot in London, mainly. Wes Anderson did a lot of research on it. He was obviously a big fan of the book, spent a lot of time at Roald's house before writing it, and a lot of that has sort of got caught up in the film, but we'll talk about that later. But do you think Millie could give us a brief rundown of the plot, Mike?
Yeah, do you think you could do that? Go on. What's the story about? What's it about? Go on.
It's about a fox who
steals the chickens. And
he steals chickens and he and his wife get stuck in a cage at the start.
They do get stuck in a cage, yeah. But what's this? So he steals stuff from these farmers, doesn't he? And they find where he lives and try to dig him out. And so he tries to get food for him and his family and his friends as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, from their farms, yeah.
And what did you two think of the film?
What do you think of the film?
5 out of 5.
5 out of 5 from Millie.
Rave review. I'd agree with her.
Yeah.
Her opinion is correct.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know. I'm really not sure. I watched it and I really wasn't sure because it looks really good and it's, but because I because I read the book so many times when I was a kid, I don't know. I couldn't quite figure out what I felt about it. It was a difficult one.
I can see that because I think there's far more Wes Anderson in it than there is Roald Dahl. I think that's fair to say. By the time it's finished, it doesn't really feel like a Roald Dahl adaptation.
No.
But then I was trying to figure this out. I don't really think that Fantastic Mr. Fox is one of his sort of quintessential Roald Dahl books either.
No, it's a very short book as well, isn't it? It's not a very long one. After reading it again, it's quite simplistic as well. There's not a great deal to it. And so making a film out of it would have been difficult.
Yeah, and what they did was they used the book as the second act, and then they wrote a section for the beginning and a section for the end after that. So it's the middle part of the film. But I know what you mean. I reread the book, and that's the first time I've read it since I was a kid, and it kind of got to the end, and I just thought, is that it? You know? Because Roald Dahl, he does tend to sort of wrap stories up quite nicely, you know?
Yeah. What do you think? Which is better, Millie, the book or the film?
The book.
Why is that?
I meant the film. In the book, I think it exaggerates a bit more because in the film, there's only one child, and in the book, there's four.
All right. So it makes it a bit simple.
Yeah.
Yeah? And you think the story's a bit better in the film?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, that's nice.
Brilliant. We're getting into the kids now, Mike. This is it.
Yeah.
Millie's our voice of youth.
Yep. Anything else you want to say about it? Because you've got to go in a sec, haven't you? Nothing else you want to say about it? No? No? Okay. Well, do you want to say goodbye then?
Bye.
Bye, Millie. Thank you very much. I'm really glad you got her on, Mike, because one of the things I was going to ask you about was, do you think this is a kids' film?
No.
No.
It's not directed straight at kids. I think it's more of a, it's more, I suppose, family film, like in the traditional sense of it, where there's stuff definitely for the adults and stuff definitely for the kids.
Yeah.
But especially like the whole cuss thing.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah.
I like that, yeah.
The cuss you are. That was, yeah, very clever. But I really think that the only thing that makes this a kids film is the fact that it's animals.
Yeah.
Well, everything else about it is like an adult storyline. It's a really Wes Anderson storyline as well, because his films, they always have like the sort of misled father figure and, you know, lots of plotting and scheming. So it just feels perfect for Wes Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I read somewhere this was the first book he ever had as a kid.
Oh, really?
It was Fantastic Mr. Fox. So, you can kind of see where the inspiration for the rest of his films came from, if that was the first one he was drawn to.
That's really interesting. I didn't find that. Awesome.
I saw that on, I can't remember where I saw it. But yeah, that intrigued me.
Mm.
What do you think of the changes to it? The changes from the original?
Well, again, I've got to say I'm really, really biased. Like, I have trouble looking at it objectively because I love this film. But, you know, looking at the book and the film, I can make sense of the changes and understand why they did it, because it's, you know, in the book it's okay to say Mr. Fox's four children and have those as just sort of,
yeah,
you know, four children, they're one unit rather than separate characters. But in the film you're going to have more there, you know, and it makes sense to pull in other bits and pieces, you know, to enlarge that, because the story between Ash, Mr. Fox's son, and Christofferson, his cousin, you know, that becomes a very big part of the film and drives a lot of it, and almost all of the third act, which again is stuff that's been completely added.
Yeah. Mm. See, I didn't quite know how I felt about Ash and Christofferson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't quite know because it slightly took me out of it because I'm thinking of it as a Roald Dahl.
Yeah, of course you are, yeah.
And then that bit really, I don't think was, that really wasn't a Roald Dahl-esque sort of thing.
No, you're right. And it's another thing as well, that it does feel like a very American thing to have done. And one of the things that this film was criticised for is that it Americanized Roald Dahl. Is that something that you had a problem with?
No, not really. But the only thing is I was a bit confused where it was supposed to be set.
Yeah, I think a lot of people
that was the only thing, because like all there's American, then there's British, then I suppose all the animals are American.
Yeah.
And then everyone, all the humans are English. But I don't know. I thought there might be some political message underneath that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, this film is actually about the American War of Independence and, you know, us.
Ground movement, yeah.
Yeah, the tyrannical British trying to destroy their hill and then from underground plotting and scheming. Yeah, I know what you mean. I kind of, again, you know, it's very difficult for me because I'm in love with Wes Anderson. But yeah, I kind of saw it as like, you know, the animals were their separate society. And I didn't really see it as American or anything. It was just sort of another society. And then I did think they were in Britain because it looks very British.
It looks very British, doesn't it? Mm. Yeah, but it does throw you when all the animals are American.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It looks British, but they're in America. They're speaking in American accents. It threw me a bit. But, yeah. I just want to say now, one sec. I've got no problem with that Wes Anderson. I quite like all his films. I'm trying to keep. But the problem is, I like Roald Dahl better.
Ah, okay, yeah.
I suppose it's from being a child and reading all his books when I was a kid. They hold more of a place in my heart than Wes Anderson does.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that now, so people don't think I'm just picking on him, because I'm really not, and I did enjoy the film, it's just I didn't know how I felt about it afterwards. That's the problem.
It's understandable, because I think that, you know, a lot of kids, especially in this country, have a real attachment to Roald Dahl, and probably our generation as well. Like, you do feel really connected to those stories. I mean, as an adult, I've never revisited them, but they were such a big part of the age that we were growing up that it's difficult to kind of distance it from it. And it's so like, Roald Dahl as well is so tied up to Quentin Blake. You know, when you see Quentin Blake, you think Roald Dahl and vice versa. And so to see his sort of stories played out in anything but Roald Dahl, Quentin Blake's sort of illustration, is quite difficult to get on board with, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Right, so I've said my piece.
Okay.
One of the things I had a problem with.
Go on.
I think that animals were far too humanized.
Okay.
Just too much for me. Now, reading the book, you've got some animals stuck under a hill that are being terrorized by some farmers, and they are animals.
Yeah.
They're living in a hole, not a tree that looks like a house inside.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're trying to survive. Whereas we've got, in the film, we've got some animals that look like humans, dress like humans, and talking to humans as well.
Yeah.
And it just, I didn't feel their plight as much. You know, I wasn't like, come on, Mr. Fox, come on.
So basically you wanted more animals of Farthing Wood in this film.
Not animal. Yeah, well, yeah.
To put, I suppose, words in your mouth.
Yeah. Don't put things in my mouth, Tom. You know I don't like that. But
children's book, Mike. Children's book. I can see your point. Again, I think I'm going to spend most of this episode saying I see your point, but.
But, yeah.
Because, yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from. But I think what he's done with the animals is he's just... I don't think he's necessarily put them in a human world or an American world. I think he's just put them in his world.
Yes.
Because this, it's in a way, it's a really big achievement because he's done a film that's so different. It's, you know, it's a children's film. He's never done that before. It's an animated film. He'd never done that before. But he's still managed to make it feel like so much part of his universe. You know?
Yeah.
because when you go into any of his films, you know you're there straight away, like through the design and the way the characters speak and the way they act. It's Wes Anderson, and he's put these animals straight into that. So I always saw it as them being within Wes Anderson world rather than them being in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah, it just took a little bit away from the film for me that they were doing working jobs and things like that. It just took a little bit away from it. It's kind of like, well, what's the problem if he's digging them out? They'll move somewhere else. They'll get to go and see the estate agent and buy somewhere else.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Not that they've actually taken the home that they've built away.
I do see it. No, I can understand that.
That's just me nitpicking, I suppose.
No, no. I mean, you're not nitpicking. You're just sort of bringing it up, aren't you? I mean, just so we know, what else do you have a problem with?
No, that was my major thing. That's the thing that took away. To be honest, I thought it looked beautiful, wonderful. And I know you're a big fan of stop motion and stuff, and I think it looked gorgeous, brilliant.
Yeah.
It did make me laugh a little bit because whenever Mr. Fox smiled, he just looked like he was growling.
Yeah, that's.
Do you think that was intentional?
Yeah,
you think
possibly,
that was intentional?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. We need a trademark for here.
Oh, we totally do.
Yeah.
But no, production design's worth mentioning because I didn't notice this because I actually went out and bought it on Blu-ray and went through all the special features and stuff like that. But and it's funny that you bring up the fact of the animals living in sort of people houses because the design of Fantastic Mr. Fox's house is almost entirely taken from Roald Dahl's house.
Yeah, I know. His living room is based on his shed where he did all his writing.
Yeah,
things. Cool. And I saw a screenshot from it just before we did this as well, because I just had to refresh my memory. And it's got the same chair with a little bit of wood going across the front.
Across it,
In his writing, attention to detail is amazing.
But that's just Wes Anderson, isn't it? You know, he's so meticulous. And everything, even down to like costumes and little things, they have to be spot on. I know that he went to the lengths for this of photographing everything in Roald Dahl's house and getting the prop department to make the specific lamp or cups or plates for it.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Very, very cool. And I really admire that kind of attention to detail. I love that in somebody because it just shows that they're thinking about absolutely everything to do with that film, you know? God, apologies, guys. We were talking about this beforehand. Mike and me, we're jumping into this by the seat of our pants. Neither of us have got our page of notes
prepared
that we normally have. So it's going to be a little bit slapdash this week. We might jump from subject to subject. I'm like grasping. I kind of knew what I wanted to say. What did you think of the music?
The music? It's Wes Anderson, isn't it? Things like the Beach Boys turning up in it, and it's
Rolling Stones,
Rolling Stones and stuff. Which, to be honest, I wouldn't expect in like a children's film, whatever you want to call it. It just made it. I think that's one of the things that made it a bit more grown up than an actual children's film.
Oh, absolutely, because you don't expect to hear "Gimme Shelter" in the new Pixar creation.
That would be interesting.
Oh no, this is falling apart.
Oh, fuck that. Right.
Well, email in if we'll wait for your email.
So the new bits in the film, the new plot bits.
Yeah.
Beginning, pretty much the beginning and the end, because the middle was pretty much the book.
The book, yeah.
What do you make of that? What do you make of the whole let's start with the beginning then.
I think they've stitched them together quite well. Because when I was watching it, having only read the book a couple of days before, I you know, I was looking for the points where the book starts and finishes. And in the beginning, I didn't even notice that it happened. It just went very neatly in. I did notice the shift towards the end, because the film sort of builds and then starts again, if you know what I mean, because it all goes to that dinner with the whole plot to get all the food. That's completed, and then the plot starts up again. So I did notice that. But that really, the book, it does just end, doesn't it? It ends there. They have dinner, and then...
They have dinner, and then it kind of says they were sat there waiting on the hill, and they are till this day.
Till this day, yeah. Which is actually in Jarvis Cocker's song at that point in the film.
It took me a minute, because I'm expecting the book and then going, what the hell's going on here? What's... It took me a while to get into it at that point, because I was like, what's going on? Why is he not stealing from the farmers that they were talking about? Boggs and Bunsen Bean.
Oh, at the very beginning.
Someone else. Who was it? I can't remember. They gave
someone
him a different
swab farm, wasn't it?
I was like, what's going on? Hang on. What? And it just did take me quite a minute. The one thing... Because from the book, I always get that he's been stealing from these three farmers for a long time, and they've come to the end of their tether. That was the one little thing. It was like, he stole from them once, and now they're going to go to all this length. I did think...
Yeah, it escalates really quickly, doesn't it?
They seem to have jumped to something too quickly. Extreme measures far too quickly, I thought.
Yeah. Do you think that's because they've given up a lot of the journey in the film? They've given that up to the kids?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Which is a shame, because I would like to see why he's so fantastic beforehand.
Oh, you didn't get that he's fantastic then?
I didn't get that he was fantastic. I thought he was a bit cocksure, but not fantastic, because he is fantastic, Mr. Fox.
Yeah.
But he just seemed a bit cocky, which is not the same, really, is it?
No. But then is he fantastic in the book?
He is pretty fantastic, yeah. Everyone says so.
Fair enough, yeah.
No, he's not very fantastic. No, that's a good point. He's not in the book. But if you're going to give... I can excuse it in the book because it's so short and it is a children's book. They're just saying, he's fantastic. And everyone goes, okay, he's fantastic. Where you've given it a bit more plot at the beginning, why not show him being fantastic?
Yeah, I know what you mean, because there's just that section at the very beginning, isn't it? And then it very quickly goes into him being not very happy with his life. And just sort of, you know.
That bit at the beginning, actually, where he's going into the squab farm, I thought the whole time I was watching that, I was like, wow, that looks like a video game.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, one shot, isn't it? Tracks along the side. Yeah, like a platformer. Well,
that would make a brilliant video game. I wish they'd made that.
I'm surprised they haven't.
So like we said, the middle is pretty much the book, isn't it? It doesn't deviate far from it.
No, well, it doesn't. Because in the film, they've added these extra storylines with the Fantastic Mr. Fox's son and his cousin. It does have to change a little bit to sort of match that, I suppose.
Yeah. But it keeps pretty much the same. I'm trying to think now. It keeps pretty much the same, doesn't it? Fair enough. And then, like you said, when it gets to the feast, then it all starts up again. What do you think of the new ending?
Again, I could see why so many people would have a problem with it. But I just love it. I mean, the song that comes on at the end, and then, you know, everybody's dancing and happy. That's just what I want. You know, it's like the end of Rushmore. Rushmore's one of my favourite films ever. And the end of that, you can't beat it. You know, everybody's happy. Yeah. They're dancing and there's good music on. But I know at least one person who has a problem with that ending.
Who's that?
Well, I actually, during my film degree, I wrote an essay on Wes Anderson. So I looked into a lot of... you know, interviews with Wes Anderson and sort of things about his film. And one of the people that I somehow found Billy Bragg talking about Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Right, okay.
He said he loved it right up to the end. Because, yeah. You know the section when he's running away on the motorbike?
Yeah.
And they meet the wolf?
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
It didn't surprise... To be honest, when it got to past the feast, I accepted it more than I did up until that point. Because before then, I was kind of like, this isn't quite like the book, is it? Different. And then after it got past that, I quite enjoyed that. The wolf thing, I thought that was quite cool, actually.
I really liked it.
I really liked it. Especially when he puts his hand up, like...
Well, Billy Bragg, he went on this like big rant about how he saw that section of the film as like Mr. Fox accepting that he's an animated puppet and that he's not really a real animal. And then when he comes into contact with the wolf, who is real... He thought it was beautiful that like this animated fox was meeting a real animal and like accepting his limitations. And then he said they ruined it all when they do the fist salute.
I love the fist salute.
It is. It's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah. Interestingly, I saw something that said he wasn't happy with the ending of the book, Wes Anderson.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, and he found in changed the end because he found the original manuscript in Roald Dahl's.
Wow. Okay.
Of that, and I've been trying to find a copy of this bloody manuscript. I can't find it. From what I can establish, the ending they go to a supermarket.
Oh wow! So that was actually in Roald Dahl's original idea.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've gone to a supermarket in the end, or set up a line to the supermarket, which is cool, yeah.
Well, I know that Wes Anderson had direct access to all of Roald Dahl's notes and things like that while he was writing it. Because, again, in an interview with him and Noah Baumbach, who co-wrote the script, they talk about how incredible it was to have access to these notebooks. And, like, Roald Dahl was... he was very much like a pen and paper writer. He just used to scribble things down, and they were saying that there were these like huge notebooks with just pages and pages of sort of like scenes and lines of dialogue that he would hope to sort of one day work into a book. And they said that their favourite line they found that Roald Dahl never used was just scribbled in the margin of one of these notebooks, and it was just pencil note in quotation marks says, "What that girl needs is a belly full of hot cock."
Oh, he's a dirty perv.
I think that was meant to go in Fantastic Mr. Fox. And he's clearly referring to a chicken, and Mrs. Fox is starving.
No, I think that was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Easy.
It was what Mr. Wonka said at one point.
Oh, God. I'm going to label this explicit so we're not going to get into trouble. Because Roald Dahl did used to write erotica as well, you know.
I didn't know that, did he?
Yeah. There's a book floating around my house somewhere called Kiss Kiss, which is like erotic short stories that Roald Dahl wrote.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, because he had like a big life.
Is it illustrated by Quentin Blake?
Oh, my God. Images. When I'm rich, I'm going to pay Quentin Blake to draw me porn. But Roald Dahl, he had a big life outside of children's books before, I think. Because he co-wrote the script to You Only Live Twice, one of the Bond films.
And Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
The Child and Catcher as well.
Yeah,
it was like a real Roald Dahl collection.
Yeah. I think, if I remember correctly, he put The Child Catcher in because I don't think it's in the original book.
Well, it's very Roald Dahl, isn't it? I mean, that's another criticism I heard of the film, is that there isn't that sort of dark... dangerous edge that you associate with Roald Dahl.
But it's not a very dark book. It's not like The Twits or something, which is quite...
Yeah, or The Witches or something like that, or even Matilda, you know, where there is real danger there. And I think the difference is that in Fantastic Mr. Fox, it's animals that are being put into danger. You don't notice as much when you read something like The Witches or Matilda, where it's actually children are in sort of physical danger. But interestingly enough, Fantastic Mr. Fox was Roald Dahl's favourite book.
Yeah, was it? I didn't know that.
He felt that was his most complete story, and that was the one he'd done the best job on.
Yeah. Here's a question.
Go on.
Do you think he would have liked the film? Because he's quite famous for not liking any of the films that were made of his books.
I don't know. I don't know. What I can say is that his widow loved it. Felicity Dahl, yeah. Because there's an interview with her on the Blu-ray, and she says how, you know, she cried when she went to visit the set, and she just felt like Roald Dahl would have loved it. But I guess there's no telling, is there?
No.
Not until time machine.
Well, you know, if she says it, I suppose that she was the closest one to him. I suppose she would know, wouldn't she?
Yeah, it's the closest you can get to finding out, isn't it? But no, that's something I was thinking about before I looked into this. Like, what did the Roald Dahl estate think of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, there have been much worse Roald Dahl adaptations.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get to them. Don't want to say too much now because we might, you know, screw ourselves in the future.
Yeah, but hint. Yeah. The borrowers. Go on.
I've got a few interesting little things written down here. Farmer Bean in the film.
Okay, yeah.
Looks a lot like Roald Dahl.
Really?
Did you notice that at all? Yeah, if you look at it, Farmer Bean looks a lot like Roald Dahl. It's almost uncanny, it's the resemblance of them.
But he looks so mean.
He did. Because it did strike me that his wasn't very exaggerated. And his wasn't, and Boggis and Bunce seemed to be quite exaggerated, a big fat face or a little dwarfy looking bloke. But he's described as very thin and lean, and he didn't seem very thin and lean in the film, did he?
No.
He was just like a normal sort of normal stocky, I would say stocky build, I would say.
Yeah.
But I thought he looks like someone, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And there was one scene near the end, I thought, he was holding a gun. I don't know why that made me think of it, but he's like, he looks just like Roald Dahl.
I never noticed that. I can see the resemblance, though, now you say it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm not sure how I feel about, because I was reading up about it, and I saw that Dahl based Mr. Fox on himself.
Yeah, and according to the special features on the Blu-ray, so did Wes Anderson. He wanted Roald Dahl to look and sort of be like Roald Dahl.
Yeah, but Bean looks just like him. And I didn't know if they were trying to make him look like Dahl for, you know, as an homage to him or something, but I thought that seems a bit nasty if that's the case.
I don't know.
Wearing Mr. Fox's tail. I don't know, maybe he would have liked that.
Maybe he would, you know, because there is that other side of Dahl that likes to put children in peril, you know, and write about horrible things. But Bean is one of the things that really made me think, hang on, who's this film for? Because there's just so many things that I think this wouldn't be in your run-of-the-mill kids film. Like, every time you see Bean, he's got a fag on the go.
And yeah, he's
carrying like a Nazi style.
Luca.
Yeah. It's little things like that. But
farmer really doesn't need.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a hard time explaining that away as pigeons, aren't you? You know, I need that for the pigeons.
Yeah, he was quite menacing. That was, I suppose, that's quite good that you've got such a menacing villain in the film. Yeah, adds to it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, on the subject, Dahl being like, he based Mr. Fox on himself.
Mm.
When he was writing Fantastic Mr. Fox, have you heard this?
No.
When he was writing, he wanted to write something about being a strong father who looks after his family.
Okay.
Because one of his children had just died of from measles.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
And one of his other children was suffering from water on the brain after a car accident. So it was in quite it does surprise me because he's obviously in quite a dark place. And I would say this is the least dark book he's written.
Maybe that's why, though, you know, if you're actually living that in real life, you need something to escape it a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. Which, I just thought it was interesting. And you've already said it, Felicity is Mrs. Fox.
Yeah.
And that's his widow's name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. Yeah. I thought there was a few little interesting things I found.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense here in that about where he was when he wrote it, because it is about a father who's just protecting his kids, isn't it? Come what may, and like looking after the family.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, sad, sad, sad.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the technique, because you've already said it. Like, I'm a huge stop motion fan.
Yeah.
Where do you come down on that?
I really love it. I love it as well. It's funny. I just dug out my DVDs. Was it Jason and the Argonauts or something like that? Because I wanted to see some stop motion.
Yeah. I'm really glad they're bringing it back, and it is starting to make a comeback now, because Fantastic Mr. Fox isn't the first one to have done this. You know, like I already mentioned him earlier, Henry Selick, he's really starting to push it forward with things like, you know, Coraline and The Corpse Bride, and his new one that's coming out now, Frankenweenie, I think it's called.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It is starting to sort of to have more of a place again, and I think that's really good, because as much as I love CG, I don't think it'll ever come close to to puppets, you know?
No. I wish Millie hadn't gone to bed now. We could have asked her what she thought. But
that would have been interesting,
Yeah, I don't know what how children perceive it, though, because... What people, when they use stop motion, is it for children or is it for adults? Do you know what I mean? Because...
I would like to know how kids see it.
Yeah,
Have we got such an affection for it because it's what we grew up with, you know?
Mm, yeah, of course, yeah. I always think they look much better because you have to put a lot more effort into it. I mean, I'm going to take that back. Not that people who do CG don't put a lot of effort into it. They've obviously got a lot of work, but I don't know anyone that does CGI work. God, am I worrying about?
But no.
You have to put a lot of detail into it. You've got to make all that little furniture, and you've got to make all the little pots and things, and you've got to be very specific, I suppose, with it as well.
That's the difference, isn't it? I mean, because with CGI, nothing's real, is it? I mean, it does take creativity and skill, but with stop motion, if you're going to make a house, you still have to build a house, you know, even if it is sort of like 1/10 the scale, you've actually got to build those things, and it's a different sort of artistry, isn't it? Which is sort of...
Yeah.
At the moment...
It looks more real, I think, as well. Because, I mean, like you said, you've got to build a house. And I suppose if you've got to build every tile that's on the top of a roof, the light's going to hit it, and it's going to hit it in a way you wouldn't necessarily think. So it will look more real. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's another thing they always, animators say a lot as well, is its weight. It's very difficult to give a CG character weight. Well, it's impossible. And I think a lot of CG characters end up with sort of odd walks because it's animators trying to give this impression of weight, you know. But with a stop motion character, it's there, you know. If you're gonna, you know, Bogis in the film is a little fat dumpling, and so when they move that puppet, it responds like that, you know.
So,
yes.
Right, we've kind of talked about everything. We've bumbled our way through.
Yeah.
What do you think the film does better than the book?
For me, it's Wes Anderson. That's what the film does better than the book, you know.
Yeah.
As I said before, the film, it doesn't feel like a Roald Dahl film to me. It's Wes Anderson, and that's what I really loved about it, is it took this story that I was already familiar with, and it sort of got bundled up with this thing I love as an adult. So it's like my two halves of my life colliding, you know. I can't look at it objectively. I just can't.
You're struggling.
Yeah.
I would say it makes the world... this does it better than the book. It makes the world a lot bigger.
Hmm.
Everything seems... There seems to be more... Because the book's all set underground or on a hill.
Yeah.
It seems all very... But in a small place, but... because the film makes it look like a big white, you can imagine this countryside. I don't know, because maybe I live down in the countryside. It seems so real. It all looks like proper countryside.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
which does done a really good job of that, I think. Yeah. So, do you think the book? Go on.
No, go. We'll do the book first. I was going to change topic. Yeah.
All right. What do you think the book does better then?
Well, I think the book is a better children's story. You know, if you've got a kid and you want to give them this story in one form or the other, give them the book, because the book is for children. I think the film is not. It attempts to be, but I don't think it's a kids' film.
No, it's definitely not for kids. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's a fantastic, fantastic book for children. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Forgotten what I was going to say. That's right. Do you think, right? Do you think, and say, be honest, say your own opinion. Do you think Wes Anderson was the right choice for this?
Yes.
Ooh.
I do. because he's a very, what's the word? Meticulous, I suppose.
Yeah.
And it's like I said before, it's a very short book. So there's not much to work with. It's I'm sure it wouldn't be many people's first choice of a big screen adaptation.
No.
And because he's so meticulous, like you said, he went to Dahl's place and everything like that. He's the best person to add to it.
Okay. Yeah. I can see
that. Plus the style and everything that went through it is, like we said already, it looks amazing. I can't see any other way you would do it, to be honest. And I don't think you could do it better.
I was thinking about this, and I think there are plenty of other ways that this could have gone. And I think if this film had to be made in America, I think it's a good thing that someone like Wes Anderson got it, because it could have so easily become like a version of Over the Hedge or something that, you know, where it actually is transposed to America and it's done with CGI, and, you know, you would have had sort of the comedy owl and things like that, in it, which would have, not only would that have upset me more, but I think that really would have upset critics of this film, you know, if they were attached to the book. Yeah.
I think the stop motion makes it feel more vintage. Mm. And I suppose for Americans, it makes, because it looks vintage, you kind of envisage it in England.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? It's got a quaint sort of, it has got a quaint sort of Britishness, I think.
Which comes from the original illustrator of Fantastic Mr. Fox, Donald Chaffinch, because before Blake had his go at it, it was illustrated by a much more traditional illustrator, Donald Chaffinch, who still did an amazing job. It's just very different from what Blake did. And you can see his work in Fantastic Mr. Fox more than you can see Blake.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would have liked it to be a CGI sort of... It would have been very bland.
Mm.
I think, you know, maybe a lot of people, like myself, are very attached to the book itself. But I don't think you could get a better version of it, to be honest. I don't think anyone else could have done a better adaptation of it. Anything else would have been a very bland, sloppy affair.
Yeah, it's easily done, isn't it? I mean, I should just say that I know you feel like this as well, that I'm not totally against CGI. Like, some projects it's the right choice for. Like, I love Pixar to bits.
But I love everything they do, yeah.
It's nice to see that there are other styles coming through again, because for a while it was just CGI, but now, you know, all the way through for the film industry as well, people are starting to return to sort of traditional methods.
Mm.
Which is a nice thing to see.
Yeah. I had a thought as well.
Go on.
The stupidest character in the book and the film is Badger.
Yeah? Go on. Why?
Because he's the biggest out of them all. If he was that hungry, he'd have eaten one of them. Why is it all right to eat a chicken, which is probably talking as well, going, don't kill me, don't kill me. Yeah, he won't eat a mole or a rabbit.
Or, you've hit on something really good here, because, you're right. Like, why are the chickens not anthropomorphized as well? Because it's not a size thing, because there's a mouse in the film, and he's, like, running around having conversations.
Precisely. That badger's stupid. He could have been king of the hill.
King of the beasts.
Yeah, that's precise.
In the book as well, he's stupid for another reason. because he's just he doesn't have that attack with Foxy in the tunnels that they have in the film. He turns up in the tunnels and he's just like, oh man, everyone's starving to death, and you know it's your fault, but never mind.
Mr. Fox just goes, yeah, it is, but I've got a plan. And he's like, okay.
Come on.
Like, I was looking through the book and there was an illustration and the badger is obviously bigger than the fox. And thinking about it, a badger is pretty much bigger and more powerful than a fox.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He'd snap his neck.
The badger's a pencil jockey, man. You know, he's stuck behind his desk in his lawyer's job. He hasn't got the raw power that the fox has kept up.
He's too upper class. He wouldn't dirty himself by killing stuff.
Well, apparently Bill Murray wanted to play that badger more working class. He wanted to do it with like a Boston accent, which is sort of similar to Good Will Hunting. That kind of accent. He tried it on set and Wes Anderson was like, that's not how I see the character. Just do it like this.
Yeah. I like the fact as well that I read somewhere he recorded all the voices like in barns or fields or stuff.
Yeah, he actually, by sound.
Yeah,
he went out and he got it, which is something a lot of people are doing now. Like Where the Wild Things Are was done like that as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't just confined to a recording studio, you know. Which is, I don't know who the first one to do that was, but it makes more sense, doesn't it? Because you don't need to be in that recording studio anymore.
No. Reading that he recorded it all outside, it did strike me that William Defoe's character did sound a lot cleaner. Did you notice that, the rat?
Looking back on it, I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that he was the only one who didn't record with everyone else. He recorded in Paris.
Well, Meryl Streep didn't either. Those two were separated, yeah. But no, you're right. And watching the film, knowing that they recorded like that, yeah, there are points where you can hear that there's a bit of an echo on it and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just William Defoe's as the rat was... I thought there's something not quite right about the sound of his voice. And it only hit me when I read up. I was thinking, I bet he did that in the studio or something. It wasn't quite right, yeah.
Mm. Wes Anderson had a whole subplot planned out for the rat that had to get dropped from the script.
Oh, I think I read a little bit about that, yeah.
Because it's sort of alluded to in the film, but there was this whole section about the rat having once been in love with Mrs. Fox, and then sort of that's why the two of them are fighting. And
yeah.
I remember hearing him saying that the only thing that remains of that in the film is rats wearing a digital watch, which was going to be a big part of it. But,
There was a scene where he said, I've still got the watch. She hasn't asked for it back yet. Yeah. It's a bit creepy.
Funnily enough, Willem Dafoe's character, the rat, is the only one that I thought, why is he American? Because he's so like New Orleans and like that part didn't make any sense to me. But.
Yeah. Mm. Who knows? So I think I know what your answer is going to be.
Go on.
Which thing's better, the book or the film, Tom?
The film.
The film?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I might just marginally have to agree with you.
Really?
Just marginally. The book gets points for you know, because I've read it since I was a kid.
Mm.
I think the film did. So it did such a good job, and it was and it gave you a little bit more. So I'm gonna go with the film on this as well.
This is quite telling because we've both said the film, but Millie said the book, didn't she?
No, she said the film. She said the film.
You're right. Yeah. She did say the film.
Yeah,
right.
She got confused. She was nervous.
Point I think meaningless. Don't say that, Mike. Everyone's gonna listen to this. You're just embarrassing your little sister.
She's never going to listen to it. It's explicit now. So.
Yeah, but your brothers might, and then, you've caught the Cornish household, Mike. Well, there we go. I think we've wrapped that one up. We can only apologise. That was really shambolic this week. Oh, and, to top it all off, I've just lost the Skype connection with Mike. What a perfect ending. I'll try and get him back. Hello. Hello.
You'll never guess what.
Go on.
I hadn't had it plugged in properly.
Oh, man. It's just it's poetic. It's what a beautiful ending.
Oh, dear. Do you want to record the ending again?
Yeah, go on then.
Sorry, bud.
I'm just gonna let. I'm not cutting anything out. I'm picking it up from here. So it's important, man, that we, you know, we stay true to ourselves.
And yeah,
even though we've messed this one up.
What are we doing next time?
Next week, Mike, we're doing Kick-Ass.
Yeah, we'll do a much better job next time.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know why? Because it's a comic book.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, thanks for listening, guys. If you stuck through to the end, really, we really appreciate that. And please, email us your insults at backtothesourcepodcast@gmail.com.
Or find us on Facebook and insult me on there.
Indeed. Yeah? Thanks very much, guys. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.